This is Down to Brass Tacks. It's the Friday edition of the program going until 2 o'clock. Who's next in line? Hello?
Good evening. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, two quick points. But before I do, I just want to support the point that you made earlier regarding social distancing, where the guy was confused between 6 feet and the 40 square feet, and that 40 square feet is just about a couple inches more than 6 feet on either side, and therefore doesn't really make a big difference. The other point I want to make has to do with my observation of the way people have been responding to the whole matter of wearing masks. I have seen persons driving. I witnessed persons coming to work on mornings at a particular establishment, three persons in a car, a very tiny car, and nobody is wearing a mask. I've seen persons gather at more than one establishment awaiting the opening of the establishment. These are all employees, and nobody is wearing a mask, and they're all gathered together in one group. I've also observed persons driving in vehicles, and nobody's wearing a mask, more than one person in the vehicle, three, sometimes four persons, and nobody wearing a mask. And these are public. These are vehicles that transport goods and so on. So I think that we need to continue to remind persons of the importance of wearing their mask, especially now we are going to another stage of opening.
Well, I think that you need to look at not just the wearing of the mask, but that mix of things that we are supposed to adhere to, mix of rules that we need to adhere to better protect ourselves against COVID-19.
Yeah, I can agree.
The mask is only one component of it.
Yes, I agree, but the mask is the one that you can observe most easily as people move around. But hand washing and the other things are also, and wearing the mask, I also mentioned the social distancing where persons were all up together in one arm. But my next point has to do with the Prime Minister and the other members of her group last night. And I want to speak specifically to Dr. Greenidge's report. I'm a bit confused. I heard your previous caller said that he was very impressed and he was very clear on everything. I might not be as bright as he is, but Dr. Greenidge said that persons working for in excess of $3,000 would get 93% of their salary, and then they'd be offered the balance, which is 7%. This is the first category in bonds. And I'm not clear what he's saying, because I looked at a person who is earning just over $3,100. And if he's saying that person will get 93% of that in cash and the rest in bonds, 7% of that, $3,100, represents $217, which means that that person will actually earn, getting in his hand, $2,883, which is less than the person who earned $3,000 and got all of his. And it goes on as well, the person who earns $3,200, if 7% is removed, that represents $224, which means that person also gets less than $3,000. So I think there needs to be some clarification, because I don't think that it could mean to give persons who are earning over $3,000 less than the person who are earning $3,000 and under. I'm thinking that they probably mean that the sum in excess of $3,000 will be taxed at the 7% and at the other figures. But if it's not, but what he explained last night did not represent that at all. So I think they need to come back and clarify that in some way, because I can't imagine anybody agreeing to a situation where a person who was previously working for less than you now earning more in terms of what they take home paid. So that was my final point.
Okay, thank you very much for calling.
Hello.
Yes, welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, it is afternoon. It's 10 minutes afternoon.
I was saying, not for so long that I don't realize it's afternoon.
Okay, sorry about that.
I decided to call today because I was home here a couple hours ago, and I got a call from a very reliable source who works at the BRA. All right, once I was listening to the news, I realized that the announcement that I intended to make came over, in that the filing date, the cutoff point, which was today, has been extended to the 30th of June.
That's correct.
Right. So that was one of the main reasons I called. But then again, I got some other grouses to make with the same BRA. Yesterday, I did a taxi. I do tax returns for, I haven't called since last year. I'm the tax man, and everyone wants to know me as the tax man, not the staff, T-A-X, brother. I did send a tax return for a client yesterday. Unfortunately, his wife's figures are not posted to her tax return, so she could not file. But she obtained these figures, her pensions, etc., from the particular places. And I did the calculation and told him that your wife is going to owe X amount of dollars. He owes also. So he was going to extend the RA branch to pay what he owes. So I told him that your wife owes X amount. You can pay hers. At the same time, you need to give the Thomas number. You need to give the year, which is the income year. And you need to give the type of tax, which is income tax, and the amount. And off he went very merrily. This man is 86 years old. So he's not a person that you can understand would be inclined to go out in these conditions. But off he went. Lo and behold, he called me back about an hour or two later. And told me to take the money for him, for his taxes, and told him, your wife has not filed her tax return, so we can't take her money. I could not believe my ears. Some person come to pay you money, and you telling them you can't take the money? That sounds incredulous. And a government department at that too? I don't know what could be going on in whoever is in charge of the collections, hey, because at this day and age where the government needs money, if some person comes to pay you, take the money. I work it out. I work out the logistics later on. Would you agree with me, sir?
Yeah, but I think if you are a tax man, you certainly could have given them a call at the BRA and try to get behind
them. I can't get through to them.
Okay.
All I can do is to get to the persons that I know. I am not afraid with the, what you call the hierarchy. I used to work there. I've retired now for quite some time, so I don't have that familiarity with the heads. I've never worked on the BRA yet.
Okay.
I work on the other section, which was the IRD.
Okay.
Right, so I don't know who to call on there and to ask them what madness could be going on.
Yeah. All right.
Especially when you compare it to this moving off the phone.
The phone giving some noise.
Right?
Yeah.
I just chose the tax return for a gentleman, and he owed money also. And they are telling me I can't pay his money. They're telling me I can't do what you call it, electronic payment advice, the EPA. He owes about $800 on account of this extension and thing, he would only have to pay $800. But they have already gone ahead and put on a penalty on his account as at the 30th of April.
But how could they do that if they've extended the deadline?
They haven't changed the computers. So I want to pay this $800 to him and do an EPA, and it would not allow me to do it.
Come on. Biara, you need to tell us what you're doing about that particular problem, though. That
now,
doesn't make sense.
Compare this to the fact, though, that he has to pay a prepayment also on the same 2020 income. And they asked me for that prepayment on the sheet, too. But they want to take the money for 2019 income because the person is for the tax return. This is utter madness.
And therefore, he's likely to suffer a penalty on that as well?
I believe they will eventually change their computers to reflect the fact that the today has been changed. But at present, he wants to pay his money today by a check. It tells me $834 the old, $900 and something they want and would not let me to do the EPA. So I can go and drop the check in the box and no stamp no longer to catch COVID or whatever it is. So I could give him the thing and tell him to go and write this, write the check, write this. And this is, I don't understand. How do you think you got this sort of thing going on? And the government want money, so you should not tell some person, unless you file your tax returns, you're not taking the money in one hand. And then they ask you on the other hand, you've got to make a prepayment, which is for a return that is due next year, and they can take that money.
Okay. All right, thank you very much for raising it. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, Mr. Ellis. I was unable to hear the entire presentation by Dr. Greenidge, who was invited to join the press conference by the Prime Minister to provide details of the Barbados Optimal Savings Scheme, acronym BOSS.
Right.
You probably did not hear my contribution on the matter of what was described then earlier this week as a compulsory scheme. And I did hear the Prime Minister in her initial comments say that the initiative is now voluntary for public officers. And in an article by, I think he's Randy Bennett, he actually wrote, and I'll quote that bit, BOSS is the acronym for the Barbados Optimal Savings Scheme, which has replaced the initial four savings and national medium term proposals. However, I was very happy then. I didn't get to hear the whole thing. I was attending a meeting on Zoom. But I was very happy to see that a suggestion that I was hoping to hear was that it was voluntary. But I started to read this morning a set of frequently asked questions and responses put up by the Government Information Service. And this is where I'm seeking clarification, because there was a question, for example, will government ministers, parliamentary secretaries, consultants, etc., required to purchase bonds, and to what extent? The response by the GIS is every public sector worker is required to participate. Now, we know that there are exceptions. What that suggests to me, and this is how I would label now as I went through some of these questions, that the purchase is compulsory, which now makes it non-voluntary. The redemption is optional, and therein lies, to my mind, a number of challenges. Because what I'm hearing is that, from what I understand, and this is where, as I said, clarification and details need to be provided. I've been looking for something which details the entire thing, but so far I haven't seen it. What I'm seeing then is that it is not optional. You will be paid in two forms. Part of your salary will be cash, and the second, the instrument. The notion that I gather is that the central bank will be an intermediary who is going to be involved in this transaction. So in other words, at the end of each month, you have your issue with a bond certificate, in essence, for X percent. I think it's from like 7 to maybe 15. I don't remember the percentages, depending on your salary scale. If, as I understand it, you decide that you do not want that bond, it having been issued or will be issued at your payday, you will signal the day before payday that you don't want it, you want your money. There's a catch in there, and the catch is the central bank, as broker, for want of a better word, will have to find a buyer. And suppose there's no buyer, right? And I think this ties in with a question that was asked by Alvin when he talked about certainty. Now, if before anything happens, you say, I want to opt out, or I want to opt in, or I want to opt in at a certain level, there is certainty at that point where people say the government will know for sure that 60% of the persons who fall into the categories that can that should participate, then they have it. But if I can decide payday to payday that I want to be in and out, that creates to my mind some confusion. And it certainly is a situation where you are not being paid in cash as you would want to, but you are at the vagaries of the market because if there are no buyers. Now, another complication comes in if this is the system that apparently is what is on the table. Because let's say 1,000 people decide that they want on that first, the day before payday, to say, I want my cash. But the central bank is only able to get sales for the equivalent of the worth of 100 persons. How do they decide who gets money and who does not? Again, as I said, the devil is in the details. The other option, and this is something they would need to clarify for me, is if the central bank does not get it sold, can they, in essence, buy that government paper?
They who?
And they're the central bank, because the central bank is the broker. And mm-hmm. so I'm saying that if 1,000 people opt and you can only get 100, let's say 10% of it sold, how do you decide that David Ellis gets it as opposed to the Maxine getting it? You understand what I'm saying?
I heard something in there that you, the person who owns the bond, that you can designate someone to purchase.
Yeah, but if I can't, in other words...
But if you can't find, you're saying if you can't find somebody to buy it, and the central bank cannot find somebody to buy it, then what?
Then you are stuck with it in a situation where if it is truly voluntary and you were able to exercise that option up front, you would have said, I cannot participate because I cannot afford based on my expenses for this for the first year or 6 months or for the entire 18-month period. I really cannot afford to give up that. And I went through a whole discussion. I think it was on Wednesday or Tuesday, whichever day it was, the first day Mr. Johnson was on about that. So the you know, because as I said, for me, it initially sounded as though that were the case. And so that is a complication. I mean, there's a further complication as well beyond, which ties into the whole question of when, because you see, a bond typically is a single purchase, the way it is worked out. And the question of when what's the value at the end for is. But I think that's an issue I would bring up at another time. But I really would like to have some clarification on, one, this notion of voluntary or optional, because as I said, to me, the optional element of it comes when I try to sell it, because based on what I'm seeing, and I recommend people read those frequently asked questions and the answers provided, that you are actually going to be required, according to what is said here by GIS, to purchase these. And therefore, then the government will register your interest in selling. But there is no guarantee. That introduces a level of uncertainty, I think, from the point of view not only of the employee, but of the employer government, which is seeking to, of course, get access to certain financial resources. So it would be useful, and if I remember correctly, this matter is before the social partnership, particularly the representatives of workers. But I think there's some details that are required if they're really saying that this is, in fact, no longer compulsory. I would just reiterate a point that I made last time I spoke, which is that perhaps if they do it the way that is simple and let people indicate up front, they can very quickly get a figure which says, based on the responses to this offer, then X number of persons have agreed. This is the kind of level of cash flow savings that we will get month to month, and we can go to the public, we can go to institutional buyers. I understand there were some discussions with credit unions, which would, of course, interest me. But these are the details. But right now, as I see it, Mr. Ellis, you have a proposal that is complex, that does not offer the flexibility of volunteering to participate, and also complicating access to money when it comes, which I think will create more confusion. But, of course, It is not final from what I understand, and therefore it would be interesting to see the details that go into this, because as I said, when I read it, I said, good, at least people have an option.
But well, but remember, part of the, what has to happen is that there's the input from the credit union movement as well, and I think you're still involved with that.
Well, so, I am a member, but frankly, in even trying to get certain information from leadership of the movement in relation to the impact of the last restructuring, I was promised that by a senior executive of the movement, and that was over a year ago. I haven't seen it yet. But what I can tell you, I certainly will do my analysis and share my thoughts. I will say this, and I will be very honest. I said it before. An instrument which pays 5% versus something that pays less than 0.25% in having money in the bank is an attractive one, notwithstanding the challenges that people face having been burnt. But the reality is, as I said to Mr. Johnson earlier this week, Barbadians are should be about Barbados. But at the same time, if government wants to get maximum kind of participation, they have to engage in a word that we love to bandy about these days, full transparency. Because from what I am seeing, enough information is not given to the average person. You see, because when you hear you can participate, the details will come when people have to sign off. But I am just saying to people, I certainly will want to know, because it is important when cousins.
Well,
don't.
Let me say that on this question here, will government ministers, parliamentary secretaries, consultants, etc., be required to purchase bonds, and to what extent? To give an answer, as has been given here, that every public sector worker is required to participate is somewhat ambiguous, because first of all, it does suggest that there is it is mandatory, and it still doesn't really specifically answer this question in the way that one would expect to have it directly answered. Okay, down to brass tacks. And here is another reason why you listen to this program. It's, yes, the moderators, it is the regular callers, and it's the occasional caller, yes, who will come with something that's totally different. And it is this reason too. When we bring people together to explain something that you want clarified. So that's exactly what we are seeking to do on this question of this BOSS program, which has been announced by the government. We have on the line two people, Dr. Kevin Greenidge, who is an advisor to the government, and we heard some questions raised earlier by Maxine McLean. Now, she's on the line as well.
Yes,
and
I am.
This is your opportunity. If you have questions about this program, this particular concept of the BOSS, which has been developed by the government, and you need clarification, use this opportunity to put your questions to Dr. Greenidge. Good afternoon, Dr. Greenidge.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, we got Maxine McLean. Maxine, you had some queries earlier. Put them on the table for Dr. Greenidge, and let's see what he can respond to.
Okay, the first question that I would ask, and I'm happy that you are giving the public this opportunity to Dr. Greenidge, is to walk us through, well, first of all, if I, as a civil servant, say I do not want to participate in this 18-month program, can I say no up front for the duration of the initiative?
So, Maxine, hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. But Maxine, that's not the question that we pose to the civil servant. The question that we pose is, how do you want to convert the bonds allocated to you into cash immediately and get it on the same day as your wages?
No, but
so it's not
but,
a question.
Dr. Greenidge, with all due respect, I asked a very specific question for a very specific purpose. When I called Mr. Ellis this morning, I said to Mr. Ellis, my understanding initially in part of the discussion I heard was that it was no longer compulsory. It was no longer mandatory. It was voluntary. Voluntary suggests to me that if I say no, I and I, because of my extreme circumstances, then I'm not required to participate. So what you're saying to me is that you will be required to purchase the bond, right?
What? So, Maxine, I'm probably missing the what's happening behind the scenes in terms of the logistics of it with the question you're asking me. You can say I don't want to participate, meaning I don't want a bond, and you will receive your cash over the 18-month period. Nothing will change.
Your salary.
Yes. As cash.
Okay.
What made you, did you have a different interpretation at any stage, Ms. McLean?
Yes, I did, because from what I saw, it was that you would get the bonds, and then on the first day, well, the day before payday, you would signal to the authorities whether it is, and that would have to be confirmed as the Ministry of Finance, to your ministry, whoever does the payroll or whatever, that you wanted to convert those bonds in cash, into cash, and then they would be put on the market for sale. Stephen, and I noticed that Dr. and I asked the first question.
Maxine, so
sir,
Miss McLean.
Maxine is fine. I've known you long.
I know. So let me walk you through clearly how we envision the process will work.
Okay,
and then you
great.
Tell me if it's clear or if I need to clarify it. Let's say we start in July. Between the 5th and 10th of July, each public servant will be given a form. You're still looking at how the form will look.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be indicated, this is your monthly net salary. This is the amount you have seen before your custom take home in cash, right?
Yes, okay.
This is the amount, let's use a 10% ratio. This is the amount you will get in cash, the 10%. Let's say it was $5,000.
Yeah.
This, your net monthly take home is $5,000. You are allocated 90% in cash, so $4,500, and
yeah,
we allocated a bond of $500.
Right.
Do you want all your money in cash, if you are part of the bond in cash, or all of the bond in cash, or none is bond in cash? Let's say the case you're talking about, the worker says, no, I want all my cash, forget about bond. That's fine. On the payday now, the worker receives his full $5,000 in cash. Now, if you ask me how we make that happen, it is that immediately an instruction goes off to the central bank to convert that worker's bond into cash. And because central bank is actually purchasing the bond and then reselling it on the market, it happens instantaneously. So there's no delay. The worker will not be in a position waiting for anything to happen. But from the worker's perspective, all you're saying is that, oh, so you're telling me I got 10% in bond? I got a $500 bond, and I got this. Now I want a bond, partner. I need my money because I have to do things, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, he's opt out. He's opt out of keeping the bond and opt to keep cash. And immediately he has his cash. So we are kind of, this is how it works.
But let me ask a question, therefore, because I'm looking at it now as a planner, right? Where you're saying this, and we are looking to manage, because my understanding is that you're looking to manage, one, government's cash flow, and two, and thereby reduce the wage bill in the short term, as well as having a pool of financial resources for investment in capital projects. Now, if we do this on a monthly basis, I see it becoming pretty untidy, in a sense, because If you go through that each month, and I hear about the automatic, because, well, you confirmed something for me just now, which I did not understand. And so let me put that on the table so it is clear. You said that the central bank will, in fact, be purchasing the bonds up front for those people who opt out, and then they would, in turn, put them on the market and sell them as soon as they can. So the central bank is not just a broker or whatever. They will actually be involved in purchasing. Now, my question, therefore, what is the logic of what I call complicating it in that way, as opposed to have a person say, look, I do not formally want to participate, but the truth is, if as a decent and reasonable Barbadian, interested in Barbados, if I find myself with cash, I can go like others and buy if they're on the market. Why are you going to complicate this by doing it month-by-month transaction like that?
This is beauty of it, Maxine. And actually, it's not complicated. Here's the beauty. The way it's done now, you notice that the government, in the example I just gave, the government still end up issuing a bond. That bond is at the central bank. And then another individual, Barbadian company, person can buy that bond. Correct? And therefore, the bond is issued. So the worker, what we record on the books, still, in this case, the 90%, the 4,500, not the bond component. You follow me? So we have saved that space. In the alternative scenario, saying where we're just going to issue cash, then I don't save any space. Let me make it again. Through the example I just worked through, right? When the worker opts to get his 4,500 in cash and the other 5,000 in bond, he said, no, I don't want any bond. I want my money in cash, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he ends up getting his 5,000. But notice what happens on the other side. The government gives him 4,500. And somebody else has the bond that the government issued. In this case, the central bank. And central bank is who's crediting his account with 500. So the government does not dish out the full net salary. They dish out in cash. They dish out part, which is 4,500. And he gets the remainder because his bond is converted. So at the end of the day, someone else has this bond. So on the fiscal, we record only the amount, the 90%. You see what I'm saying?
And that's what you're saying to me then, Kevin, is that you are actually doing an accounting or book entry. You see, because to me, as I said, the objective for you, from what you just said to me, is that you want to show on your book that you have paid 90% of your wage bill instead of 100%. My difficulty with that is that the whole logistics of it, to my mind, is counterproductive. Because if you are saying, if the person, because at the end of the day, you still end up, because if the central bank borrows, pays for the bond, then you are actually borrowing from the central bank.
But no, because remember, the central bank, the creation of central bank market.
Saying that the person, the bank holds it before they can sell it.
No,
so how do you record that?
So let me tell you the other part of it, Maxine. So first of all, let me do the one side. The fiscal, we're not doing anything that every country, this is an IMF program, supported program, every country where records the fiscal, we usually record it on a cash basis. So we're recording on a cash. So whatever we pay in bonds, frees up space to do capital expenditure work. So there's no gimmick there. Now, your concern is that the central bank may end up holding this bond. So to deal with that, we've been working with the credit unions, the financial institutions, and again with the general public, so that even before we start, financial institutions, credit unions are already, central bank is going to create a portal, and they will register with central bank and upfront indicate their appetite. So for example, someone from the private sector, say company A or say credit union B, will indicate, sign me up for 500,000 bonds or sign me up for 1 million bonds or sign me up for 10,000 bonds when they come due. So we're creating on the demand side a cadre of persons and buyers who immediately central bank can sell off to.
Okay, let me ask this question, because I think this is where one of the issues that Ms. McLean is seeking clarification on. Once the financial institutions buy the bond from the central bank, then how does the money that the central bank gets from the bond get back to central government to address the capital works program?
Good question, David. Now, David, we have to make a distinction between fiscal space and financing. The government is not short of financing money in the bank. The reserves is over 1.something billion, and we're going to the IMF board on the 3rd. We've passed all the indication, we have passed all our targets, and another $49 million will come, plus an additional $90 million because of COVID. So when the government is not short of cash, right? But it is physical space is what constrains it. What I mean by that, you know, under this program, and we are now keeping the house in order, fiscal house in order, you're paying your bills on time. You have revenue on one side, you have your expenditure on the other side, and you don't want to go up ballooning expenditure to run large deficits. You want to maintain a decent, we reduce the surplus from 6% with the IMF agreement to 1%, but we want to maintain a decent small surplus.
We understand that.
We can take money from anywhere and spend. So the only way to do that is to shift from current expenditure to capital expenditure. So this is not the funds, it's the space. When you pay in bonds, you don't record that as a current expenditure. That's a future debt. So that space allows you now to put that into capital.
Okay, you put it into capital. I want this explained in a language that the average person can understand. Because what she has raised is, is this just a bookkeeping method that you are using?
All right, look at it this way.
So you say, look, we are, from what you said earlier, you are recording the fiscal on a cash basis. So that accounts for the money that the person gets in their hand, the public servant. The bond goes to the central bank. The person purchases, another person purchases their bond from the central bank. Do you end up borrowing from the central bank, or how else does that money that has been taken by the central bank get back to you in the central government?
All right. So we do not borrow from the central bank.
Right.
Picture this way. Imagine a room, a building with two rooms. Let's call one capital and let's call one current expenditure. Outside the building, we have lots of, call it money, that we can put into the building. But that building is confined. The space remains the same. This is our fiscal space operating. By removing a portion from the current expenditure room, I'm now have enough to push it into the capital expenditure room. I don't know if it makes sense that way.
The bottom line is that it's a debt,
and with that debt, it reduces. It doesn't record it now. It's a future expenditure, but now it only records the 90%.
Okay.
That's exactly, if I might, Kevin, answer the question I made about the book entry. What you have said, with all that you have said, I would sum it up as this. In reality, in the short term, public servant takes a pay cut. In the example you use, of 10%. In the short term.
Just let her
explain, and then I'll get you to respond.
I am speaking layperson. I'm not an economist. You know that very well. You work with the economists in the family, not me. I'm not that person. But what I'm saying, let us explain it in layperson's terms. If you are saying to me, a cash cut, if you don't want to call it a pay cut, of 10% using the example you use, and you have the option of converting that 10%, which is issued in a bond, over which you do not decide before the salary is paid, that you can then say, look, I want to cash in this bond. But in the essence, I am receiving a 10% less in terms of cash in my hand. And so, technically, whether you want it, because you mentioned cash, it is a cash cut. And what it is really saying is that government, because of its IMF constraints, given the program, it has to balance its books in a way that reflects the fiscal target and so on. Because if it didn't, you would probably be doing it somewhere else. So I just want people to be clear, because my main reason for calling
can I respond to that?
Or not, it was compulsory up front.
Let me respond, because I have to make it clear, Maxine. You agree with me from the start that a worker gets all his money in his hand, so it can't be called a cash, a cut of any form, cash or otherwise. Because
my money,
no,
in
let
my
me,
hand.
Let me, let me,
money my,
just hold on, Ms. McLean, hold on.
Maxine McLean, hold on a minute. If you say to me up front, and you agree with me, that a worker can opt to get all his money, then there's no cut involved. The other worker, though, they opt not to get all, and he has an investment in the future. this is nothing different. What
you know, in all of this, please let's not
private company would do allowing workers to invest in their own future.
Trying to make this as simple as possible. I think many people appreciate the whole idea that the government is asking the public servant to assist ultimately in the Capital Works program in a way that they will not lose in the long run. Surely, if you can afford it, they decide that they're going to take the bond, then they will get the interest and ultimately the principal later
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
However, I still don't understand how the government is going to get that portion of its money from the central bank to put into the Capital Works program. This has not been explained in language that we can easily appreciate, especially when we have heard repeatedly that the government is not to borrow from the central bank, and you said government is not borrowing.
David, central bank government has deposited in central bank about I don't know your amount. You are amount. It's not that government is that government going to save on the expenditure side. So you don't have to borrow anything. So you save on the expenditure
okay.
by not paying that amount in bonds, and you use that savings to generate Capital Works. Perhaps the simplest way to put it.
Okay.
But the question, therefore, is in the process of trying to save, and you are focusing on your wage bill, which, as we all know, is the biggest.
No, we did not focus on wage bill alone.
Okay, hold on. Let me explain what I'm saying, because you see, you are focusing on your wage bill because you're saying to public officers, as of July payday, we will be issuing your remuneration in two components, a cash component and a debt instrument, a bond.
Yeah.
And therefore, by not having to pay out 100% cash to 100% of your public officers, you are, in fact, reducing your expenditure. However you dress it up, that's
correct, Maxine. No, Maxine, I totally agree with you. Yeah. And therefore, you're saving some funds which you will use for capital expenditure. We agree on that.
So, in essence, the capital expenditure element of it, because this is why when I had this discussion earlier, I see two objectives. One is government is trying to reduce its expenditure. We talked about transfers and all of these things as part of the requirement that you reduce these things. And secondly, it is trying to get some stimulation. Now, the question is in terms of the second one, is there any scope to look beyond the public servant and say up front, we have a Capital Works program of X, and therefore we would like to why not? That from the point of view of your IMF arrangement, you will have a challenge going out there and borrowing. That is my understanding. Is that correct?
Yeah, Maxine, I think let's put some context on this. The only reason COVID has come upon us and has forced us now to take this approach temporary. What happened before COVID, we were on track. Everything was going fine. But if you check up to last week, you heard the Prime Minister mention last night, unemployment claims was in excess of 40,000. So the private sector is on pause because of COVID and shutdown. So in order, and tourism may not get back here anytime soon. So in order, it falls on government's responsibility to try to expand and bring forth some of its capital projects, not because it is looking for money to do it and before we already had a capital project program in place, but it needs to bring forth something to mop up some of that unemployment that is being shed, has been shed off in the private sector because of COVID. This is not
I understand
normal.
That. So the
and in
is
addition
how
to that,
financed?
And let me tell you, by the way, let me tell you, you want the first thing your brother taught me, and you know me, he was a very good friend.
Yes,
is that
I know.
In the crisis, you expand on capital and you reduce on current.
But the question is, how do you finance the capital? This is one of the questions.
Just hold on a minute. I think up to this point, there has been an explanation of how the government is seeking to finance the capital, and that is by the issuing of the bonds and that sort of thing. Now, I think when you spoke earlier, there was a component of this. I think I assume that we've clarified that, where you were suggesting
really,
you were suggesting that it was compulsory.
Yes, and there's not, what I when I raise that, I raise it because what the point I'm really getting at is, why is it that we have to have the burden on the public service? Now, if the burden is on there because government is being forced as a primary objective to cut its wage bill in the short term, that let us say so. If you're saying we cannot go out there and mop up, because you talk about mop up, there are liquidity realities, you know, and they may change as people are out of work, etc. But for decades, we have had significant liquidity in the banking system. And you also would know that, and as a person who used to buy bonds for decades, those things are attractive or used to be attractive. So my question is, are you constrained to go to the public servant because of your IMF agreement? And that is
my thing, as I indicated before, it is not an issue of liquidity. Government has all the liquidity it needs right now and more. In fact, by building back the reserves to over $1.7 billion, we have no liquidity problem.
Okay, it's
the issue of space, which we save from issuing bonds, and you put that additional space savings into capital. In addition, Maxine, I would not want to use the word burden, because if I tell you, if any public sector worker needs his cash, it's my money, I want it now, they get it now, no burden. If a public servant can afford to save a little piece, then he gets or she gets 5% on that. There is no burden. Now we are also going to involve the rest of the country in the future with other instruments. Maybe we're looking at a pandemic solidarity bond. You're afraid, Prime Minister, let's talk about that. But in economics, one facility, one tool for one purpose. What's the purpose we're trying to achieve here? To shift our expenditure a bit from current to capital by saving the space.
Okay.
Not that we don't have the liquidity, it's a space. And why we are doing that? Because in the current environment, the private sector, the rest of the country was locked, though we're not opening up, and unemployment is rising. So government is looking to bring forward some of its key capital projects to mop up some of that. And by doing that, we are creating jobs that other people can't get things. So we're helping one another.
Right.
So I can't even imagine the word burden in this.
All right, Dr. Greenidge, hold on. And Ms. McLean, thank you very much for coming and raising your questions.